February 19th, 2009 session of the House Subcommittee on Workforce Development to order. I'd like to thank everyone for turning out bright and early this morning. And I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2399. Kevin, would you please give us the bill summary?
Thank you, Chairman Witt, members of the committee. We are here today in House Bill 2399, and a preview of coming attractions. Essentially, we're going to be doing the same general drill that we did with House Bill 2398. Before I get the bill kind of laying a framework as to where we're going, Commissioner Vakian is here. We'll be giving a presentation similar to what Mr. Eater did with respect to 2398. That will be followed by Mr. Sager from the Governor's Office. We'll be doing the same sequence of events with respect to the board up there. And as last time, we put in front of each of you a grid for you to take notes with. There are copies in the back for the public, if, I guess, the scorecard, for lack of a better description, so people can keep track at home. And then after that, so different individuals from the community will be coming up and giving their opinions, responses, and thoughts with respect to the bill. As for House Bill 2399, this changes and modifies the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, specifies who will be sitting on the board, outlines the duties, and modifies the duties with respect to the Education Workforce Policy Advisor that is appointed by the governor. It also modifies different responsibilities and duties that the Oregon Workforce Investment Board will be responsible for going forward. There's also some rulemaking authority that has been given. With respect to the board up here, similar to our hearing on 2398, we have broken down on a section-by-section basis the different provisions and how this bill will, or what the bill does by on a section-by-section basis. I would emphasize, as we mentioned before, that as with 2398, this is shorthand up here. I had some help, appreciation to Roxy, up in one of our committee administrators who actually helped me yesterday putting this together. This is shorthand for what's in the bill. If there is an interpretation that either members of the public or the representatives find at either conflict or there's some nuance involved, I would encourage you that it is the bill that is authoritative. This is simply a matter of trying to keep things in shorthand to make things easier to communicate. So, again, and the same thing with the public, this is not something that is stone. It is the bill. This is simply shorthand. So, with that, I will turn it over to Chair Witt to move forward.
Thank you very much, Kevin. And once again, just to underscore what Kevin said, the chart's intended to make it easier, at least for me, if no one else, no other person. But for our committee to be able to track what it is that this committee bill recommends, and then to take a look at what the governor's office has either done or intends to do in the near future, because our bill was put together back is a function of the last session and some of our interim work, and in the intervening time, a lot of things may have been done, which may mean that some of our recommendations have already been accomplished. But when we're done with this process, then as a committee, we are going to sit down and take a look at both of our committee bills, see what we have recommended, see what's been accomplished, and then see what we as a committee would be advocating moving forward on. So that's kind of the process, and that's why we're doing it this way. I understand that it may be a little bit complicated, but for those of you in the audience, we do have additional charts available for you to help you track on this. And then an additional request for those of you who may be testifying. While I realize that this, in essence, structures your testimony and may be a little difficult or add an additional challenge to you as you present testimony, it would help us if you could address this kind of on a section by section basis. And for those of you who are early on in the process, I realize that that may be an additional challenge, and we will make those adjustments ourselves accordingly. With that, I'd like to first please call up our Commissioner of Labor, Mr. Bradavakian. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Bradavakian, and I'm the State Labor Commissioner. I want to thank you for holding a hearing on 2399. I also understand that the committee would be interested in comments also on LC 3539, which I think you have a copy of or will shortly. I know a lot of the folks that are interested in testifying on 2399 are also very invested in 3539. That LC, and I'll talk about it a little bit in just a few minutes, is the one that deals with the beginning of the restoration of career and technical education to the K through 12 system. And we, while the two bills are not dependent upon each other, they certainly are relevant to each other in many ways. And since it has the same pool of people wanting to testify, I understand you don't mind having comments on both.
I don't, as long as we focus on the main bill at hand and make references. Kevin, do we have copies
yes,
of that?
Yeah.
So that, because I don't believe our committee's seen that as a committee yet. So thank you. Please proceed.
And then lastly, I also want to thank the committee for really the extraordinary attention that you've been paying and thoroughness to the issue of workforce development, not just now, but in the interim. You may remember we talked about these two concepts in the interim, and this committee passed both of those concepts out during the interim, and so I appreciate you bringing them up again now during session. I thought what I might do is just give you the overview of both of those concepts. There are a number of people here today that want to testify. You've heard from me before. So I'll give you the overview and maybe a little background and what led us to this point, and then we'll let the other associations and individuals testify. House Bill 2399 is a concept that was derived out of a number of folks, including the Bureau of Labor, but certainly legislators, the governor's office, and others that were critically looking at the way that we deliver workforce development services in the state. And in analyzing that, we really came up with a couple issues that we thought were an impediment to what is a pretty good system that the state already has, but an impediment to really getting us to where we needed to go. The first of those was the actual governance structure at the statewide level for how we make decisions regarding the investment of workforce development dollars. I think you have a copy, and you've seen it before, this very good chart that was drawn by the community colleges at the request of the governor in order to help illustrate the way we do workforce development in Oregon today. I think it is a very accurate chart. What it illustrates is that we have what I would construe as three different entities, all with a hand in decision-making regarding workforce development investments. The first is the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, the big box up to the left there. And this board, appointed by the governor, makes decisions regarding the roughly $120 million of federal money that finds its way down through the community college system and into local workforce investment boards and from there into programs in local communities. You've got the governor's workforce policy cabinet, which is made up of agency heads that advise the governor on how to invest state workforce development money. And the one alteration I might make is to take OECDD, the Economic and Community Development Department. It has its own separate fund that it can use for economic and workforce development, and I would make it really a third category. All three of these doing some very good work for the citizens of Oregon. but with some structural difficulties in coordination, because there is no mechanism for them to communicate with each other on how they're investing money, what priorities, what industry sectors or training programs are being targeted, and that inability to communicate and coordinate the efforts is a real hindrance to us having a comprehensive and coordinated statewide plan for workforce development. And then the second of that, the second thing that we really identified was that we were seeing a change in the demographics of our workforce in Oregon, and we think based largely on the elimination of classes from the K-12 system as an example. In the last 15 years, we've seen the average age of an apprentice in Oregon rise from 19 years old to 29 years old, which is what it is today. Despite the terrific job that I think the community colleges do with many of their programs, many of the community college presidents have told us that they're oftentimes having to spend a year doing remedial education with some students before getting them onto a career path, which is a great hindrance to getting folks into the workforce early. You combine that with the fact that many industry sectors are seeing an aging workforce. As an example, the average age of a Pacific Corps lineman right now is 53 years old in Oregon. Then it is a real indicator that we need to be doing workforce development at a younger age than we're currently doing it. And so because of those issues, we lent a hand in developing House Bill 2399. It does primarily three things. The first thing it does is it changes the structure from something that looks like this to the second sheet you have, which looks like this, a much more streamlined workforce investment board. While there are only about 23 members currently serving on the current workforce board, it has slots for roughly 40. We wanted a much more nimble and efficient board, and so this bill proposes 19 members, a majority of them from Oregon's business sectors, representatives from labor, some standing members from critical Oregon agencies, and then two ex officio members from the legislature. This board would create 5-year and 20-year strategic plans in workforce development for the state. It would advise the governor on how to invest not only federal money, as is currently done, but both federal and state money. That is one very critical difference between this structure and the current structure that we have with the Workforce Board. We think we will end up with a much more effective and efficient system if the same body is analyzing and making recommendations for the investment of both federal and state money rather than doing that separately. And then the third would be an accountability responsibility so that money would be tracked down to program recipients to ensure that programs really were graduating skilled workers that ended up in Oregon jobs, and then the ability through the governor's office to transfer money from programs that weren't making the grade to those that were effective. That's a summary of 2399. LC 3539, the draft you have in front of you is simply a draft. There will be several changes to it before you get it in bill form. The two primary ones would just be that in Section 2, where it says that grants for workforce programs or technical education programs would be awarded on a basis of two calendar years and then evaluated for renewal. We're really looking for a permanent restoration of programs, not simply short-term shots at public schools. And then the second would be Superintendent Castillo and I are coordinating this effort, and we would like to have these tied to the new high school graduation requirements, and so we'll be adding, Superintendent and I will be adding language to this to reflect that. And Mr. Chair, with that, I think I will stop and see if the committee has any questions of me before we let other folks testify.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments from the committee? Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, how on earth did you ever get this to work out on paper, on such a small piece of paper?
Well, if it's on a larger size of paper, too, Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative, the community colleges put that together, and I actually think they did a very good job of sorting out the various pathways that we have in the state and reducing it to something that was readable. But it also represents the complexity of what we're dealing with now and why we need a more efficient system.
Follow-up. Please.
Commissioner, what we're doing is we're taking these three entities, basically, that control the money, is that correct, and trying to put them into one? Is that what we're trying to do, to have one focal point, kind of an hourglass approach to this thing for making prioritization as well as distribution of funds?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, I don't know that I could construe that the governor's workforce policy cabinet controls the money, but these groups either have authority to disperse money or they advise the governor on how to disperse money. And so what we're trying to do is just consolidate the analysis of how money should be invested into one entity, so we don't have that difficulty with three different entities that have no means of communicating with each other.
Last thing.
Absolutely.
That has, thank you, Mr. Chair. That has been a concern of people in my area for quite some time, that we can't seem to get everyone in step. So thank you for your work, Commissioner.
Very good. Additional questions or comments? Yes, Representative Fulton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I was, I guess I've been pretty in favor of this concept before, as you know, thinking that we need, a more coordinated effort towards workforce to achieve, really strategic goals in this state. And I know we're not talking about House Bill 2398, but I was hoping that that at some point you can take a look at that bill as well, because I think we're going to need your input on how these two bills gel together. Ultimately, it's our committee's work, but I also have some concerns about how we bring these two bills together to make a coordinated strategic effort in going forward, Mr. Chair and Mr. Commissioner. I think your input on that would be vital.
Well, I can give you, Mr. Chair, Representative, a very quick comment about that. I'm supportive of that other bill, 2398. I see it as more of a delivery method than a structural change in the governance, and so I would see this new governance system just as the vehicle that can help deliver the things that are in 2398.
Thank you.
And I think that's just that's point on too, exactly. We do have a delivery system, not necessarily totally complete, and as you've pointed out, there are some other bills that are coming forward too that will assist in filling some of those holes. And I also believe that Representative Holvey and some others will be also having some additional bills. And I know that Representatives Esquivel and Dembro have worked on an additional bill that, when it comes out, will undoubtedly be a committee bill. And if either of you would like to kind of give a brief summary of what that attempts to do, it might be helpful just so that the folks in the audience know kind of some of the things that we're thinking about.
I'll defer to Representative Dembro, but I do want to say one thing, that we have included the commissioner in our thinking process on this bill. We have discussed it with him and sat down. We had a meeting, and I think he thinks we're on the right track.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Representative Dembrough?
Sure, Mr. Chair, thank you. Well, what we're working on is something that really we've seen come before us in several forms already, and it's really closely related to this LC 3539. That is, you know, an effort to create better partnership between our K-12 system, community college, labor apprenticeship programs, et cetera. And there are a number of LCs floating around this building right now related to this topic. So I see this as a theme, really, that's going to be emerging from this session. People are really interested in this pipeline of creating skilled workers. So, you know, I think that's probably all we need to say about it right now.
Absolutely. Thank you very much,
Mr. Chair.
If you'd hold on just for a minute, Representative Holvey, I'd like Kevin to give us an idea of where that bill is at in the process at this point.
And thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. We actually, timely that it's been brought up, because that, I understand, has been first read now, and we're waiting it to get to the Business and Labor Committee so that it comes down to us. I think we're tentatively attempting to get it down and in the mechanism or in the machine so that we can possibly look at it next Thursday. So just that's what we're working on right now. So.
Good deal. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have, as the Commissioner knows, been working on a bill that provides job opportunities on public projects, essentially for apprentices, and also has a funding mechanism and a new fund for some of the monies that would be collected from violations of the bill, if you will, or penalties that would help fund the educational model. I also have an LC in that has not come out, which is also aimed at being a funding mechanism to put into not just apprenticeship programs, but also training programs, K-12 programs, one that would fit very well with the LC you've presented today. So I'll be interested to pursue those as much as it's my feeling that we can put this policy structure in place, and it's really good, but I think given our workforce needs in the future and the real critical point we are in time, we need to get some money behind these programs, and hopefully this body will recognize the importance of doing that at this time. So,
Mr. Chair, if I could just in closing and in response to the representative and what all of you have said, I just think it's not just exciting that we're talking about these things, but very responsible we're talking about them. We all know the budget constraints and what they are. Some of these things that are things that can be done without a fiscal, incorporated into existing structures within the state. And frankly, there is no more important time to beginning investing in education, both the community college and the K-12 level, and in workforce development than right now. Not only because we have emerging industries like the renewable energy industry and some healthcare components in that industry as well that are looking for workers, but Oregon has got to be prepared for a couple years from now when we start coming out of the economic situation that we're in order to take advantage of opportunities. And if we don't have some of our young folks trained and ready to go to work, we're going to be in trouble. So now is the perfect time for us to be making these reforms, and I'm very grateful for the committee's attention on the issue.
Representative Escobar.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, is that kind of like what my grandpa always said, that when people start selling chickens, you buy chicks?
And maybe.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, please, Representative.
Thank you. Just one point. You know, one group that I'm increasingly convinced needs to be part of this conversation, I brought this up before, is people working with veterans. Because, you know, I believe that people are coming out of the military with some very relevant skills, and we need to have them be, you know, really part of the conversation so that they can be brought into the pipeline as well. I don't know if they need to be specifically listed in this bill or if there's a place for them.
We have, Mr. Chair, Representative, one of the reasons that we chose the government agencies that will be engaged with this board is because you have the veterans are right at the top of the list, very important. There are some things being done, but there's not a great coordinated effort to help folks transition back into their lives when they're done with their service. But you've also got disabled workers. You've got workers that have been injured on the job. You have low-income workers, all that have some kind of assistance from many different state agencies. All of these are populations that we could be targeting and coordinating into particular industry sectors. And what we're hoping is that this new, more nimble and efficient, responsive board to Oregon industry can incorporate all of those populations into the plan.
And to Representative Dembro's point, Kevin, we are actually going to focus on veterans here in the near future, I believe.
We are trying to coordinate right now, getting basically the four. There's at least four individuals that we're trying to get on the same page. So again, we're tentatively looking at a couple dates in the real near future, possibly Thursday.
And to the commissioner's point, there are many populations, and in fact, was just contacted the other day by a group of youth mentors, and they in turn have about 50 different programs, all under the broad umbrella of youth mentors, and would very much like an opportunity to see how they can plug in, because they're preparing youth for tomorrow. And consider preparing the kids that they mentor, it being critically important that they be prepared for the workforce. So this whole notion is starting to catch fire, and there are many populations. Just before you leave, we heard from Ace Academy the other day, and I absolutely believe that these folks are onto something here. I don't know if you've been to Ace yet, but it's a group of schools, half a dozen of them, five of them, closely centered around the Park Rose area, and they have created a charter school that then works with a number of the unions in the area, and they have free access to several different union training centers. So they have the center, the tools, the instructors. They have the umbrella of the charter school that then makes it possible for the five different schools then to bring all their students in to study construction, engineering, architecture. I was absolutely intrigued by this model, and I think one of the most valuable things that we could do as a committee would be to help replicate that in other parts of the state. As Vice Chair Huffman pointed out, one of the challenges, or at least I think one of the strengths of this program is that we have a cluster of schools fairly close together.
Of districts.
Of districts, yes. And it may be more of a challenge if we were to push that out into other parts of the state, but I'm so interested in this. We've got to find a way, because I'm absolutely convinced that these folks are onto something here.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would agree. You've got programs like Sabin, Schellenberg. The Bureau of Labor has three programs, one in Tillamook I know you've had testimony about, that all provide some terrific training for kids. The one thought that I would leave you with is that in addition to those kind of cluster programs,
yes,
where kids, you know, will drive or get bused to the school, we feel very strongly that there needs to be a presence of career education in every middle school and high school of the state.
Absolutely.
Not for two reasons. One, with these cluster type programs, we do not believe you can reach enough young people to fill a pipeline of workers. And then second, even for those that are not going to go into a specific trade that is taught at one of those schools, we think there is great inherent value in having exposure to career education, even if you don't end up specializing in one of the things those schools, that school offers. So for both reasons, we'd like to see a presence in every school, which is the purpose of the LC you have before you, that over a 10-year period will have full restoration to some degree in every school in the state.
I think that that's the ACE Academy is one attempt to provide that mechanism, since we don't have it in our school systems. And you're absolutely right. We need to have that reintroduced. We've heard time and time again before this committee that many of the youth going into the workforce are inadequately prepared, have poor job readiness skills. And frankly, if you want to talk about responsibility, there's nothing that makes anyone more responsible. I remember my first shop class in seventh grade when they started that bandsaw up. It was like, wow, this is for real. This is serious. And you take some kids and you teach them how to adequately handle power tools, and it just raises to a whole new level the individual responsibility that's gained in having operated those tools in a safe manner. So with that, Mr. Commissioner, thank you very, very much. Certainly,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Appreciate all your help on this. I'd like to call up, please, from the Governor's Office, James Sager.
Mr. Chair,
one
question.
Representative Esquivel.
And maybe you can answer this. I'm not sure. When I was in school back in the old days, we used to have classes that for a half a day went out into the business community and worked. Mm-hmm. Do they still have those classes today?
I'm not aware of it, and that may be something that some of the folks...
And it was a great preparation for life itself, because you were graded on your attendance, your punctuality, and then if you could maintain and keep that job.
The whole school of work notion. James?
What a novel idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, James Sager from Governor's Office. Representative Esquivel, if I might deviate to address your question just then. In many cases, back when you and I were in school, since then the insurance requirements, child labor laws, other things have changed, so that the experiences we had are now difficult to both legally and safely provide under the current regulations. But in fact, there's an awful lot of community service work going on where we're trying to provide students that same kind of experience, but helping with trail restoration or helping with removing of invasive species in the community, things of that nature, that are environments where that those safety issues and things can be better controlled. So, deviating just a little bit from today's testimony, but so if I might. Chair Witt, members of the committee, we can walk through your chart.
Welcome back.
Thank you. See if we can put some items in the boxes up there this time. And as I go through, I'll try to clarify some other pieces that have been brought up this morning. To begin with, the policy statement, great policy statement. That's what the workforce effort is about. So let's focus on Section 2 to begin with, which is the membership. As it was mentioned, when the governor took office, there were 40 people on the Workforce Investment Board. By action of the governor, executive order, he trimmed that number down to the present set of 23, which consists of 19 members plus four legislators. We have two from each chamber, two from each party, so that there is a balance there. The governor, in addition to the or inside that structure, added a third labor representative. According to the formula, we only needed two. The WEA requirements say that we need to have a locally elected official, so we have a county commissioner on there. And there were some other decisions that were made. For instance, Commissioner Preuss could be viewed as representing community colleges, But because of the structure of our system, we felt it was very important that a community college president also be a member of the board. So that's why our numbers are a little different. The other thing that's very important here in the structure, while the number is almost the same, the structure is a little different. The federal regulations say that 51% of the membership must be representing the business community, not associations, but actually business people. And so every time we add a public sector person, we have to make sure that we're adding a business person or one plus some part. So what the governor did is he looked at the structure and he says, look, we don't need on the state board to have all of the agencies have their representative at the board. We can trim this board, maintain, in fact, a larger percentage of business representation, but then also add labor and these other people into the mix by having the governor's workforce policy cabinet, and we'll get to the chart in a minute, and I'll kind of explain that, but have the workforce policy cabinet designate one person who will go and officially sit at the table and be the representative of the agencies. And that allows us to keep the number smaller and more of the people that are actually doing the work on the ground there at the table. So that was how the governor shrunk the size of the board through the executive order and provides the coordination. If you want, we could look at the charts that Commissioner Avakian has mentioned, and that way maybe when we talk in later points, it'll make more sense.
Okay, and
if you don't mind.
Sure, and for Katie's purposes here, shorthand for Section 1 is existing policy.
Fine. Yep. But, okay.
And then for the second block, it was trimmed from, was it 42?
It was trimmed from 40 down to
from
23. 40,
from 40 to 23. And that was by executive order?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
So if I might, just to kind of walk you through this chart, so maybe as complicated as it looks, it might make more sense. This chart was produced by the Community College and Workforce Development Department at the request of the governor and the OWIB, with the focus being the square here at the bottom, WorkSource Oregon Centers. The question was, are Oregonians, the individuals out there on the street, are they getting a coordinated service, and if so, how? And that's what this is trying to reflect, is that the way we have coordinated all the activities, the individual Oregonian doesn't need to know all of this kind of mishmash behind the scenes, how it all works. Is it coming together so that an Oregonian can go to a center, a location, and get the services he or she needs?
So this is the notion of one-stops.
This is what supports the one-stops. Okay. So what happens here is, yes, we do have the Workforce Investment Board. That board advises the governor. That board now works collaboratively with the Joint Boards of Education to coordinate. In fact, they were, for the last two legislative sessions, have been an integral part of not only the policy coordination, but also the budget coordination to make sure that we're moving forward. The Workforce Policy Cabinet are the state agencies that report directly to the governor, that get together on a monthly basis, and we make sure in the conversations, are we aligning our work as it is reflected in the strategic plan from the OWIB that the governor has received and signed off on, to say we're going to be coordinated on these efforts. Ironically, the Workforce Policy Cabinet is actually a national model of what we refer to as a virtual workforce agency, because we don't have a single agency. Some states have tried to pull agencies together or rearrange bits and pieces, but this model, like I said, is kind of a national model that people are looking at to create what you really can't do sometimes in consolidating agencies. So the Workforce Policy Cabinet is coordinated, and so by having just one person of the cabinet officially serve on the board, we're able to keep the size down but still have the coordinated effort. So I just wanted to try and provide some clarity to that section. The so moving on to the third box. Establishes length of terms. The governor established the length of terms and the rotation, so that way we didn't have the whole board disappearing at the same time or having to be reappointed. So again, as part of the
governor's order.
Executive order, the terms exist. Section 4, it is the Section 4, Section 5, they're referring to, I mean, these are
statutory
just, yeah, things that need to be in the bill no matter what. Section 6 begins to hit close to home for the presenter because that is the position I hold. And so it begins talking about the duties of the Education Workforce Policy Advisor. The governor, in carrying out the work of both his office and the board, under, again, under the federal guidelines, has designated the Education Workforce Policy Advisor as the representative to the board and responsible for coordinating all of this activity. And works directly with the staff then of the board to make sure that this stuff comes together. What this appears to do is makes the policy advisor the administrator of the board and the supervisor of that staff. Right now, I supervise the staff and the direction, but I'm not the administrator of the board. The governor's office, years ago it was set up similar to this, before we, back in some of the earlier iterations, where the governor's office actually had carried out programmatic work, and so you had staff that oversaw all the compliance issues and those things. Over the last, gosh, that was probably in the early 80s, I'm guessing. So over the last 20, 25 years, what has taken place is the governor's office is that coordinating, plays that coordinating function and oversight, but we don't have policy analysts and, monitoring staff and those kinds of things. Those are the agencies that take care of that work. And so currently this work is housed in CCWD because they handle so much of so many federal programs that we can actually utilize staff who can do part of WEA but also parts of other things at the same time to make all these systems work. So this would be a major shift kind of back towards having the governor's office specifically kind of carrying out that kind of work as opposed to overseeing and holding the agencies responsible for that that activity.
So this is a fairly significant change from what exists here today.
It does from the standpoint, not the coordination, because like I say, we are
coordinated. That's there in the department.
But it is the actual kind of down and dirty workload shift that would have to then, a staff would have to be added to the governor's office to be able to carry out this kind of work.
So a shorthand for our board might be for our box up there.
I couldn't figure out a shorthand.
It moves responsibilities from state agencies to the governor's office. Is that...
You could just simply put James.
Yeah.
James.
Squared. yeah. And really, if you look at sections 6 and 7, that's really what is happening. So it's shifting the responsibility to the governor's office and the...
From the state agency.
From the state agency.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I Section 8.
Transfers from the agency to the governor's office 6 and 7.
Yep.
Yes.
And you have to add people?
Well,
we transfer them from the agency in?
Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, that was my first question when this was coming up, because we're struggling to try and figure out if this moves forward, what will be the fiscal impact.
Okay.
And as I started to mention, what became clear is that because there are so many other federal programs that run through CCWD now, we're able to have people do kind of multiple pieces. So if you shift people over to just work on the workforce component into the governor's office, that isn't just a direct one-to-one.
Uh-huh.
So we have to bring people in, but then CCWD has to still carry on the other federal requirements that they have, and so it's not a simple one-to-one. The preliminary report that I saw is that this may be in the neighborhood of about $500,000 of costs. But I'm saying that's very preliminary because they're trying to sort out how this would shift.
Thank you.
So then Section 8 is, okay, another board, is targeting workforce development in highest priority job sectors. I think I testified some time back to all of you that, again, at the direction of the governor, coordinating through the Workforce Policy Cabinet, and this includes the economic development folks, we have a coordinated focus on four strategic areas. The healthcare workforce, manufacturing. I never know whether they call it green, clean, or renewable technology issues, and regional high-wage, high-demand jobs. Those are the four primary areas, in addition to the cluster work that economic development and the workforce board have been working on over the years. So we're kind of adding these pieces because it provides us greater clarity as to how we're focusing the limited dollars that we have to make sure we have the greatest bang for the buck. So we're trying to coordinate.
It is a current focus. Then.
Correct. That would be
current
good.
Focus. And we all know that there's that we have these different sectors that we're focusing on. So,
okay.
Thank you.
Section 9 is a conforming section, so it's okay.
Okay. All right.
So Section 10 took the pieces that were removed from CCWD in Section 7 and put them into the governor's office in Section 10. So it was a movement. And this is all of the issues, the money coming through, the monitoring of the, you know, how the funds go, the whole kind of...
So this, again, is a shift from state agencies to
the governor's office.
Correct.
Another easy one. Section 11 is just conforming.
Conforming again.
Language.
Okay.
So Section 12, in the shorthand, calls for OLIB to conduct biennial review of workforce development performance. That's what we've been currently carrying out through the Workforce Policy Cabinet in my office, is to have that regular review and make sure that there is coordination. And again, because the cabinet represents all of the agencies, that's where the governor has seen the extent.
And James, doesn't the federal statute require this?
Yes, we have reporting requirements regularly that we have to be monitoring.
So shorthand would be per federal regs or something?
We believe we're doing this,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And again, just to emphasize, we believe we've actually gone a step further because of the coordination we've had with the Joint Boards of Education also in this collaboration.
Could you speak just briefly here, too, about that coordination between the state and local levels?
Well,
workforce boards.
Sure. Chair Witt, what the state is doing, and in fact, the new guidelines are out, and we're waiting for feedback from the field. But, and again, this, and we're kind of jumping around to another spot. I mean, the governor has directed the state OWIB board to not only have oversight, but to actually approve, in essence, sign off on the fact that the local plans are coordinated with the state focus.
Okay.
So what we're saying is, for instance, the four strategic areas I mentioned, okay, local boards, here are those four strategic areas. You need to send us your proposed plan. The state board will review it. If they feel that it is focused, you've justified, for instance, what you've identified as the regional high-wage, high-demand jobs, and we've talked before about how the employment department has provided us that data, then, in fact, it's sent back to local to say, July 1, the money starts to flow, you know, do good things. If there are disconnects, the OWIB can look at it and say, wait a minute, you need to come back with more clarification, or you need to change this part of the plan before we're going to sign off, and the money will start flowing, and you'll be able to carry out your work.
And could you tell us how many local boards there are, and is there an opportunity in this coordination process to actually have a dialogue with the local folks about this coordination?
Chair Witt, there is. Now, I'll have to admit that a greater effort on that coordination has come about this year, partly with both change from the message from the governor as well as change in leadership on the executive board of the OWIB, where there has been more open dialogue with the local boards. A representative of the local board comes to the executive committee meetings and shares concerns and thoughts. But what the executive board realizes, it needs to be two-way, not just a representative coming, but actually the executive board making the effort to go out and meet with the directors of all the local boards. And so I believe this year we've had two of those kinds of meetings, but you know, that is something that again, trying to strengthen that coordination and understanding has begun to materialize.
Thank you.
If I might also, before we leave Section 12, I just want to clarify if, and maybe I'm not reading the language correctly, so but it appears that, you know, currently each state agency comes forward during the legislative process and, you know, lays out their proposals and the legislature takes action. The way I read it, it would have the OWIB or a single budget, or I'm not quite sure how this would come together, but I'm not sure how that aligns with the legislative process of going through each state agency and looking at the budgets. I just bring that up.
Okay, I understand. Sure. I think I understand your point.
Section 13, another conforming section.
Okay.
We're in sync over here. And Section 14, this is where it maintains the current structure that we have, and just to clarify, we have both local boards and regional boards. One would think that regional boards are larger than local boards. That was my assumption my first day here. That is incorrect. Regional boards are a holdover from pre-WIA federal regulation, and what because especially in areas like Eastern Oregon, where the territory is so big, we have a single board, local board, for Eastern Oregon, part of Southern Oregon, even part of the coastline. That's much too large of an area to have a single board. We used to have regional boards all over the place. A lot of those have kind of overlapped now. So what we've done is we've said, go ahead and have these regional boards inside this one local board so that, again, we take the area of the state and we maintain smaller units so that they can have a better focus on the economic and workforce needs of those areas. So it's confusing at times when people talk, well, are there 15 boards or 7 boards or, you know, one board? It's because we've tried to marry the two systems so that especially the rural parts of the state have their representation and their communities can have a coordinated entity to work with.
Okay, so shorthand for that box would be maintains current structure?
Leaves entire system in place.
Okay. And section 15 is conforming?
Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. James, thanks for that walkthrough. I want to take you back for a minute to section 7.
Okay.
Just for a minute. You know, in consolidating a lot of this, and I understand where you're going with, you know, your position in being in the governor's office trying to really direct a lot of these things. I'm curious why in Section 7, and maybe there's a reason for it, the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development basically receives the Title 1B implements Title 1B by itself and receives the funds by itself and directs those funds by itself. It appears to me it's approved by the governor, which I would assume may be through the advisor. I'm just wondering the consistency of that particular part when we're talking about also, you know, a new structure for the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. You know, is having a little more, I guess, participation in all of this. And this Section 7 doesn't seem to be consistent with that. Maybe there's federal regulations for that or something. I don't know.
Chair Witt, Representative Holvey, are you asking in relationship to the way it is proposed to read or the way it is currently in effect?
When I'm looking at House Bill 2399, it is,
right.
I believe that's current language. It hasn't been changed. There are some parts that have been deleted, but simply in Section 7 through Subsection 1, A through D is left in place, and it appears that basically the community colleges and workforce development directly receive and allocate these monies, and that kind of goes around the Workforce Investment Board, except for one piece where there's a formula recommended and approved by the governor. So I'm just kind of curious how that fits with the consistency of everything else you're doing.
Chair Witt, Representative Holvey, I guess the way to look at it is Community College and Workforce Development Department is the staffing that is needed to support the Oregon Workforce Board and the activities, because the board, again, is an advisory board. It's not a regulatory agency. It's not a state agency.
Mm-hmm.
And so both by legislation as well as the governor has determined that that is the agency that will be, in essence, the fiscal agent so that the money can come through, so that we make sure we have the monitors there, we have the, you know, the folks that can write up the contracts and make sure and report back to the federal government, et cetera. Obviously, since I wasn't around at the time that this decision was made, it was obviously determined that that was the right place to house in Oregon this responsibility. In some states, they have commerce departments, for instance, and the money all runs through the Commerce Department. So here in Oregon, it was determined that CCWD was that location. And so, again, the staff has been built around both supporting our community colleges, but also the workforce component of the activity of the state. And since the commissioner is appointed by the governor, and this is all under the governor's responsibility, there seems to be a reasonable connection there.
Thank you.
Additional questions or comments? Vice Chair Huffman.
Thank you, Chair Witt. James, I thought Representative Holby was headed toward my question here, something that Representative Esquivel brought up that I guess I had missed the point earlier on the as part of the restructuring. I'm concerned about adding FTEs in this process. I'm sure you've looked at it. I would love to see some redirecting of personnel from CCWD into the new department rather than adding people and adding overhead, which is kind of taking, in my mind, fewer dollars from the end goal. It just, I hadn't caught that part before, and that concerns me.
Chair Witt, Representative Huffman, I wouldn't disagree with you on the the potential impact on either general fund resources or ability to set aside additional federal resources to pay for this FTE. That cost follows this shift in operation. Having, again, the governor's office be the direct program processors as opposed to the agencies doing that work, where, again, we can get value in being able to share, the staff doing the work, shifting over to the governor's office. The system, at least for the past several years, seems to have continued to work well, where my predecessors and I, again, oversee that operation, but we're not actually managing the accountants and the program coordinators, et cetera, on a day-to-day basis, but hold the department responsible for carrying out that work.
Additional questions or comments?
James, I've seen we've moved from CETA to JTPA to WIA, and with a new administration in Washington, D.C., have you heard anything about another possible rework of workforce development, job training?
Chair Witt, there has been a lot of conversation about there's a strong recognition by the new administration the need to train and educate the adult workforce. And I'm sorry if I forget what it is that I've said to this committee versus the other committees we've been talking to over the last several weeks, but I mean, that has been the governor's focus for 6.5 years, is to have this better coordination, not only with the pipeline issue of the K-12 students and opening up the door of opportunity beyond high school to careers, being able to pick up the tools and go to work, but also the adult workforce, mm-hmm. who oftentimes, especially in these economic downturns, you may have been working in a mill, for instance, for 20 years, and you have no clue what your skills translate into other sectors of the economy. And so one of the pieces that, again, the Workforce Board, working with the agencies under the direction of the governor, has put together the Career Readiness Certificate and other pieces to help support that system and help support retraining of the adult workforce. So things are never moving as fast as maybe all of us would like, but at the same time, we're making leaps and bounds as far as the ability to help Oregonians better weather the economic downturn now, but even more importantly, be ready to take advantage of when we do come out of this recession.
And have you heard any rumors that the Obama administration may be coming out with a new act or anything?
I have not, okay. Chair Witt. The other thing that we're interested in is what kinds of waivers the new administration would allow us. Under the previous administration, those waivers in many sectors were pretty tight. Mm-hmm. So some of the proposals in this legislation, for instance, would require waivers. Mm-hmm. And so we just don't have a sense yet from the new folks in charge as to kind of the direction that that they would be leaning.
Stay tuned. That's my experience that this changes with some regularity. Changes about as frequently as administrations change. So.
Chair Witt, oftentimes, as I think we'll be seeing over the next several days, the change is announced before the rules are there for any of us to figure out what it means.
All right. With that, James, thank you very, very much. Certainly appreciate your presence here today and helping us chart this out. I'd like to call up next our panel of Tom Chamberlain and Melissa Unger, please. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name's Tom Chamberlain. I'm president of the Oregon AFL-CIO. I would venture to guess everyone in this building, everyone engaged in education, everyone who employs an employee has one goal when it comes to workforce, and that's to have the most skilled workforce that we can have in the state of Oregon. We know that creates wealth for the middle class, and it attracts businesses to Oregon. And the vehicle to do that has been educational systems, and we have many different programs to train many different skills. We have the apprenticeship program, we have OHSU, we have community colleges. We believe, the Oregon AFL-CIO, that House Bill 2399 and LC 3539 streamlines the OWEB board. It brings in the decision-making on how we invest to one point. This is one of the things we struggled with in healthcare in Oregon. I was on the Oregon Health Fund Board. Is that when you have different components of a program scattered throughout the state, it's very difficult to come up with a strategic vision. I think the streamlining of the board does that. It's also important that we make sure we're not duplicating efforts. And that's very difficult to do when you have a big system like we have in the state of Oregon. And I believe that the streamlining of the board, the coordination between the board and the regions and the local boards will help us to spend our dollars wisely. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Melissa.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name is Melissa Unger, and I'm representing SEIU Local 503, and I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2399 as well. Much of what Tom Chamberlain just said is kind of where we stand on this bill, too, but I think that the streamlining of the board, we represent many of the workers, we represent the workers at the Employment Department, we represent the workers at the at Bowie, and as well as classified staff at the Oregon University System and at the Department of Education. So we represent workers at so many of these different agencies that provide these services. And I think that a lot of what's happened through Executive Order 1, this bill makes sure that that work will continue through after this governor. And I think that that's one important step that this bill takes. And then the other is I think that the streamlining of the board, once again, will actually help us coordinate with those local and workforce investment boards better. And that's one of the things that our workers at the Employment Department continue to want to see happen. And I think that James Sager from the governor's office indicated that they have started to do that work in the last couple of years, and that we'd like to see that continue, and we hope that this bill will make that continue. And so we are in support of House Bill 2399.
Thank you very much. Questions for our panel? Certainly appreciate your coming out today in support of this very much. Thank you. All right. Next panel is, please, Kelly Ross and Mike McLaren.
Good morning, Mr. Good. Chairman, members of the committee.
Good morning.
Kelly Ross from the Oregon State Chamber of Commerce. As I told you at your last meeting, workforce development has been designated as one of the highest priorities of the State Chambers of Commerce. And Commissioner Avakian has been kind enough to consult with us from the very inception of the proposal before you and met with our board of directors, and we're very pleased to offer our support on behalf of the bill. I have with me this morning Mike McLaren, from who is manager of the Salem Chamber of Commerce, and the Salem Chamber has a long history and very successful history of developing close partnerships with public school system and community colleges in their area on the issue of workforce development, and he's here this morning to offer some comments based on that experience to you.
Thank you, Kelly. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Mike McLaren, CEO of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce, and also serve as director on the Oregon State Chamber of Commerce.
Welcome, and thank you.
It's good to be here. Regarding House Bill 2399, I think the Labor Commissioner is right on point with this legislation, especially concerning the need to simplify the governance structure and to create more accountability for how workforce development dollars are invested in the state. In my 20 years of being close to school-to-work efforts and workforce development efforts, I do believe that while good work has occurred, that it has not met the test of being the most efficient delivery system for those dollars, nor has the accountability really been there. In many cases, what occurs is that you have dollars dangled either at the federal level or at the state level that entities become very good at creating and making proposals to receive that money without a vision. I'm a firm believer that dollars should follow a vision. Those dollars are many times received and then implemented in ways just to adhere to the strings attached or the parameters of that particular proposal, but it doesn't incorporate then a large vision that uses and leverages the resources available by all partners or all entities to make that occur. So you have some siloing of that turf and control issue that goes on in that delivery system. So I do believe with the simplification of the governance model and then some real good visioning that incorporates all partners at the local levels, that some benchmarking and clear outcomes can be established, and then the accountability be implemented in a better way than before. I would like to speak specifically to Section 2 and urge your consideration. While business is listed there as being significant participants in that governing body, that chambers of commerce are listed very specifically, because I think what that would do is tie you into a network of business organizations around the state that can provide you input with regard to how those delivery of services are really taking place at the local regional levels, in addition to making sure that that business representation is the voice of small business as well. There have been times in the past where there have been bodies put together on workforce development issues where the business representation at the end of the day had all large businesses, and some of that is good, but there can be a disconnect in terms of what would really work then for small businesses, which make up the majority of our state.
Thank you very, very much. Questions for our panel members?
Just please. Comment, Mr. Chair. That's a really good point, yes. I think. And Representative Holvey mentioned the other day, so that when we do discuss business, there are a lot of different aspects to business and labor, and making sure that the board members that are appointed do represent the width and breadth of business. As long as I'm on OWIB, you know, small business has a strong voice there, but clearly will not always be on OWIB, so I think it's a really good point that you make.
I agree, absolutely. Mike, I almost heard echoes of what the commissioner was talking about earlier when he said that there's no better time to prepare than now. And boring down a little bit on that. I know that you mentioned the importance of getting started. What would you say to folks that would suggest that we have budget considerations right now, we're in terrible sorts, looking at coming out the back end of a bad recession? What's your response to that?
Well, I think where you invest in the most difficult of times is very critical. If you want a real life example of an investment decision made way back during the Depression era between Post and Kellogg, two big companies at that time that were neck and neck with regard to their market share. And Kellogg decided during very tough times to continue to invest in marketing. Post did not. And ever since, that market share has just been extremely wide in terms of a gap, and Post has never caught up. You can equate that same sort of situation to us as a state, that in any decision that any company would make with regard to whether they're going to locate in a region or, in this case, a state, in the top five criteria, available workforce and workforce development and training are two of those top five criteria. If we do not invest in both the current and future workforce of this state, we clearly then would put ourselves in a very disadvantaged position with regard to what I think all of our collective responsibilities are, and that is providing the opportunity for our citizens to obtain great opportunities to stay here in Oregon and work and raise their families and increase their level of productivity by moving up with their own education and skill training to higher and better jobs. So I think the vision of it, then it becomes the practicality of what we can do. The vision of having career tech opportunities in every school, I think, is a great vision. We're not going to get there in one leap and bound, but we have to make some concerted effort to really rally the vision in regions and get started. I would invite you to really take a look at what's going to go on in the Marion Polk Yamhill County region, and I think business has a big part in helping to facilitate that vision, and I'd ask you not to ask us, but ask the Labor Commissioner to provide his evaluation, because he's going to come take a look at what we're doing later this afternoon, where when I speak of that vision, we have created a vision statement that's been bought off by the Economic Development Corporation, the Chamber of Commerce, the Salem-Keizer School District, Chemeketa Community College, and the ESD, which requires them to buy into a long-term and a short-term vision of how to quickly get a broader opportunity for career tech in the schools now. And when you get the buy-off of those partners, people have to set aside their turf. They have to buy into the vision and understand that there has to be somebody on point taking the leadership. And it's not about who gets the credit or who's going to be in control. It's about the end result in delivering the outcomes that we need, which in this case are getting our students right now exposed to the opportunities and careers that are available.
And that's a recurring theme that this committee has heard many, many times as well. Additional questions or comments? Gentlemen, thank you very much, and I think that your suggestion that we make sure that the chamber be at least one of those business seats is a very good one. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Let's see here. One more sheet of paper and I'd have it all sorted out up here. I'd like to call up next, please, John Rakowitz and John Marshall, please. AGC and AOI, respectively. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Do you want to go?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. John Marshall, representing Associated Oregon Industries. When I last visited with you, I shared with you the process that we put in place over the last year to develop our education and workforce agenda. And as we got into the discussion of workforce, it didn't take us long to realize that what we were dealing with was a very complex puzzle, almost like a jigsaw puzzle. There were a whole lot of pieces, but what was missing was the lid to the puzzle box. And if you've ever worked a jigsaw puzzle, you know that you need the lid to give you some kind of sense of what the finished puzzle is going to look like. What I believe the workforce system that we've created is a whole bunch of puzzle pieces representing a lot of very excellent, or a number of pockets of excellence, a lot of dedicated, hardworking individuals, but we don't seem to have a sense of what the finished puzzle ought to look like. And that's why we're supportive of this bill and Commissioner Avakian's concept. To add a couple, I can't add a whole lot from what's already been said, but I think there are a couple things that we see this bill accomplishing. The first is that those of you that have been around this building know that when there are resources available, there are a number of competing interests, agencies, and constituencies that are all chasing those same resources. In this time of extraordinarily limited resources, we think it's even more important to have a coordinated effort, a more streamlined effort, that will direct how best to allocate those resources to get the biggest bang for the buck. You heard a couple days ago from the ACE Academy, and I think you were all impressed with the work that they've done.
Yes.
Where is the central clearinghouse that can share that success with other areas of the state, that would give those folks the opportunity to share how they got that started, the mistakes they made, the mistakes they wouldn't make if they were to do it again? And we believe that a coordinated, centralized structure, organizational structure, can do that. Oftentimes, you test the sturdiness of your craft, not in calm weather, but in a storm. And so here we are in the middle of a terrible storm, and I think now's the time to figure out how sturdy our system is and to make changes so that when we ultimately come out of this hole, that we're prepared to get back to work of developing a workforce that will be second to none and hopefully the envy of the rest of the country. So with that, Mr. Chair, we look forward to working with you as you work through this issue. And we also extend kudos to Commissioner Avakian. He was very wasn't on the office very long when he recognized there was a problem out there and started work and involving us early on. And I think that's why you see a number of us are saying we think this is a good idea and deserves some attention. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, John. I certainly appreciate that. And I'd also point out that Commissioner Avakian has been exceedingly helpful to our committee as well. So I appreciate that very much. John, good morning.
Good morning. Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, John Rakowitz with AGC of Oregon. Why invest now, I think, is probably one of the central questions that you're facing. And investment meaning both looking at how you structure and govern your investments, and which is House Bill 2399. And one issue that I want to underscore is LC 3539 and the reintroduction of career and technical education in our middle and high schools. There's been a lot of talk today about ACE Academy. We're really glad to hear that, since it's taken AGC about 3 years to launch that.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of money. And the industry recognizes, obviously, that we have our part to do in this, and that's very critical. I will point out that it took 3 years to do it.
Yeah.
I will point out that we have 140, give or take, students this fall from five high schools, East County High Schools. All wonderful stuff. Let's put it in context for a moment. If you take what some estimates by the Employment Department say will be maybe a 13-14% growth of the construction industry, and you take the accelerated disappearance and retirement of the baby boomers, we could be looking at in the next 10 years in the state of Oregon, not just for commercial, but for the whole construction industry, up to 30,000 new workers, highly trained, highly skilled in our industry alone. How do we go from 140 to on the order and the magnitude. That's the real question, I think. And I think you have to do both. I think you have to. I view these two bills as companion bills. At whatever order of magnitude that can be done at this point in time, it's really important that they be viewed that way. You have to invest smart, wisely, just as we're doing right now. I mean, our industry has got some deep problems right now, obviously. We're at a 14% unemployment rate, but we're making the investments in things like ACE Academy, because we know if we don't, we are going to simply put the squash on our ability to have the workers we need to grow our industry. So I would urge you, for that reason, to look at the two of them, the use of the existing funds and any investment that can be made in bringing back to the middle and high schools the type of education and career education and technical skills that it's not just our industry. I've worked in economic development and workforce for the last 25 years. I know JTPA, CETA, Manpower, all of them.
I forget that one, Manpower.
Oh, that's yeah, those guys are gone already. The people that do that one really well, they're gone. So I've been around through any number of iterations back to the mid-'80s. I've done economic development. I want to underscore on this point the chamber exec from Salem, until last May, I was doing economic development for the state of Oregon. And I competed with every state in the union for every kind of well-paying job, investments that produces these kind of jobs, from Genentech to manufacturing, high-tech, streetcars, doesn't matter, name it. And the number one issue that they ask about, besides cost, is do you have the trained, skilled workforce? So I'm here to represent, obviously, AGC, our membership, but there is at stake here is the health and well-being of not only our citizens, but our economy and the ability. And so I'm just very pleased to be here today. We're interested in working on any of these bills with any member of the committee that has anything going on. These bills are other. We're here to support Commissioner Avakian. He's jumped on this. He's taken some real leadership. And finally, I will say, just so everybody knows, because I think sometimes there's a misperception, AGC has 1,100 members, roughly, and our average size is about 11, 12, 13 employee firm. Family-owned businesses that grew up here. So we have some larger companies as well, but by and large, we're very reflective as an industry of Oregon's economy. We're a small business state, so we're not talking big business here. We're talking average family-owned business with a dozen employees, average. So with that, happy to answer any questions, if there are any.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Yes, Vice Chair Huffman.
Thank you, Chair Witt. John and John, good comments, and I would suggest that the best jigsaw puzzle has no more than three pieces. And I still need the lid even to do that.
I just want to say that your enthusiasm from both of yourselves and your organizations is palpable, and I thank you for that, and I thank you for your support not only of what our committee's trying to do, but what Commissioner Avakian has been trying to do, and I think it's testament to the programs that he's helping to lead that he has the support of both business and labor to get Oregon's economy up and rolling, and I think that's absolutely critical. And my own editorial comment at this point that I know that both of you have mentioned the pipeline and how critical getting that filled is to the future of our state, and we've been told repeatedly that we've got about a decade before that pipeline runs out. And we don't put that pipeline on hold until we get out of this recession. So if it's 6 months, a year, or 2 years, we don't get a pass on that pipeline emptying out in 2 years, which says to me that our state, the rest of this nation, the rest of the world is going to come out of this recession, and we are going to get back up on our feet, and we are going to have a rolling economy. But we will tie one of our hands behind our backs if we don't lay the necessary groundwork here today for when we actually need those workers. And the last thing that we need is an economic recession followed by an adequate workforce that actually strangles our state's economy, because we don't have the people with the necessary skills to do the work that's going to continue to keep our economy on the up and up. And gentlemen, I thank you for your support for that, and it's something that we need to make known not only throughout this building but throughout the rest of the state. We are facing a veritable crisis some number of years down the road in terms of being able to have the workforce that we need to remain competitive, and we need to begin today to make that possible.
Absolutely. Perfect.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Holby.
Mr. Chair, I just want to comment. You inspired me to say something. but also I want to thank both you gentlemen for coming up and supporting this effort, and look forward to your continued participation in it. You know, we all have our I love the puzzle analogy. It's a great one. You know, we all have our favorite pieces.
True.
And we need to take the best pieces and make a better puzzle for sure with the lid on it. But you know, and I just might reiterate, this committee has been working on this issue and been sounding this cry. Last session, we were saying the same thing. We need to act now, and we should have acted 2 years ago. So I just wanted to reiterate, we're behind the curve on filling this pipeline in the future, and it's absolutely a crisis stage right now, in my opinion, and we need the investments to go into training and getting that workforce. So thank you.
We couldn't agree more. Thank you.
Anyone else? Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. I have the last folks that I have signed up here, I believe, are Jim Carlson and John Chandler. Now, if there are other folks in the audience who'd like to sign up, there's a sheet over here, and please feel free to do so, and we'll try and get you on here. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Please decide between yourselves who goes first.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Carlson, and I'm the President and CEO of the Oregon Healthcare Association. And it's actually the first time I've ever appeared on a panel with my friend and colleague, Mr. Chandler, before, so this is actually quite a treat.
All right.
Healthcare and home building generally don't, you know, come together on too many issues, but I think actually it's a very important issue, and it cuts across all the major industries and sectors in our economy. I wanted to start off by acknowledging the leadership of Commissioner Avakian on this. I think this is an issue that's been crying out for some period of time for what I would call executive leadership, and I really want to congratulate him for stepping up to the plate and really pulling together a diverse, broad-based group of organizations to start focusing some attention on this. Our membership represents about 550 licensed long-term care providers who deliver services each day to over 40,000 Oregonians, and we employ approximately 35,000 people across the state. And we are in an area that has grown significantly in recent years and is projected to continue to grow in the next 10 years. If you look at some national data where they were projecting over the next 10 years about 10% job growth, healthcare was projected to grow in general about 24%. But if you look at elder care and disability services as the subset, we're projected to grow 35%. And if you look at the last jobs report that had some pretty bleak news for the state of Oregon last month, one of the few sectors, if not one of the only sectors, where you actually had job growth last month in Oregon was in the healthcare sector, where there was a net increase of 1,200 jobs. And when you talk about strategic investments, it's interesting to note, as part of the stimulus package that we've had come down from Congress, the increase in the federal Medicaid match has been significant. comment. I've been lobbying in the healthcare arena for 22 years. I've never seen a Medicaid match rate get as high as it's going to be in the next 2 years here in Oregon. And in our particular sector, what that really means is that a huge percentage of the dollars that are going into wages and benefits and then are turning over in local communities and local economies are pure stimulus to Oregon's economy because those are federal dollars coming in. We actually had an economist, John Taponia, with Echo Northwest in a meeting last week compare the sector to Nike and Intel, which I had never heard before, because he talked about how the revenues of those two companies mostly come into the state of Oregon from outside the state of Oregon. Well, with the federal funds that come into these programs across the healthcare sector, there's a lot of pure stimulus occurring in our economy right now, and it's one of those areas for strategic investment where we have a need for jobs now and a huge growth. I think on this particular chart that Commissioner Avakian put together when we first sat down with him a number of months ago in another group, this really kind of did a very good job of capturing what I have candidly referred to as the swamp when we've talked about the workforce issue in healthcare in terms of trying to track the accountability of dollars invested on the front end and then trying to tie it into outputs. If you're going to look in an input and an output and trying to see if we're getting the output that we want for our investments and dollars, I think when you have a system that's as complex as this and is designed like this, it's very challenging for the legislature, who is the board of directors, if you will, in many respects on this, to really track your investments and to see if you're getting the kinds of output and outcomes that you desire and that we need if we are going to produce the jobs that we need in this sector. And I think this, the chart here, I think, goes a long ways to starting to bring some clarity to what I have seen as a really complicated issue for many, many years. And so when you were referring to this sheet here, into the Section 12 sections where we really are starting to build in a lot of that, what I'll call criteria and looking at the outcomes, I think is really maybe the most important part of this legislation. I don't have a fancy chart for you on this one, but I was going to show you, Representative Esquivel mentioned an hourglass earlier, and those of us in healthcare feel as if we've got a situation where we've got up here a huge number of people who would like to enter the healthcare field and profession, and there's a lot of career ladder opportunities to do that, and this is the number of people wanting to enter the profession. Down below is the number of jobs available in the profession that are available right now today, and what we've got here in the center part of the hourglass is we've got essentially the bottleneck that occurs in terms of our educational capacity, some of the issues related to licensing, accreditation standards, other things that make it difficult for us to get these people who want to enter the profession into the jobs that are needed out there in the employment sector. And that's where I think this legislation and better leadership and accountability and tracking of those dollars, we can see if our strategic investments are making the difference that we need out there to match people up in these jobs. We've got right now in our membership today probably over 1,000 vacant positions that we could fill immediately if we had enough nurses' aides and registered nurses and licensed practical nurses trained and certified that we could employ. We've got new staffing standards that are going to be taking effect starting in April with increased staffing requirements, which alone will require about 700 new positions statewide. For certified nursing assistants. Those certified nursing assistants do not currently exist. And so we've been working very hard since last year on new and innovative training programs and things to make the needs there. In our community college sector for the registered nurses, we have a tremendous number of applicants for limited number of slots. And so we are turning away folks who want to enter the nursing profession because we do not have the educational capacity in our two-year RN training programs. And these are positions where someone 2 years out of high school entering into a two-year RN training program at a community college can come out and make $40, $45 an hour with benefits. These are good jobs. And there's also career ladders for folks where they can go into a 150-hour training program, start as a nurse's aide, and many employers will then help fund their career advancement to become a licensed practical nurse or a registered nurse. And so I really can't stress in strong enough terms how important I think this legislation is, and how I think it's important not just to meeting the needs, the workforce needs of the healthcare industry, but I think also in terms of those strategic investments and job growth, and looking at healthcare as an economic engine as well. We do a good job, I think, in the human services community and healthcare community, always talking about the human need side of our policy issues. But we are a large, large employment sector. We are a very strong and vibrant economic engine for the state's economy, and it's one that will just continue to grow. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll conclude my testimony and be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you very, very much. I think what I'm going to do is have John on, and then we'll ask questions of both of you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, here in front of you again on the Workforce Development Bill Package. The first thing I want to say is thanks to an immense amount of inefficiency on my part, our logo would have been on the bottom of this, but for the fact that I'm a pinhead and kind of forgot to send it to Ms. Newhall. That has now been rectified, and you will see our sparkly little logo right there along with all the other sparkly logos. We met with Commissioner Avakian before he was actually Commissioner Avakian on this topic, and I want to echo what has already been said, that this is the cleaning out of the Aegean stables is long overdue. I was embarrassed, Mr. Chairman, as we were sitting in there listening to the JTPPA, the workforce, the school to work, all the times we've swung and missed at this issue. It is annoying at the best. It may or may not turn out to be disastrous. I guess what I'm thinking right now is when we look into the future, the inexorability of some of the changes we know are going to happen, the demographic shift, the fact that there's more of us with gray in our beards than there is young folks, we're getting older in these trades, we're getting older in the nursing profession, we have what was merely an annoyance. I mean, if you're a guidance counselor trying to figure out how to get a kid placed through this kind of a spaghetti bowl, you'd probably quit. You just wouldn't do it. You'd call somebody at the local clinic or the local job site and hope you could get them on. You wouldn't fiddle with this because it's impossible. And what was just an annoying inconvenience a few years ago may become an absolutely critical issue for us going forward. And this is going to happen, I think, this session in a bunch of other areas. When we're looking at reshaping our economy around carbon, for example, around carbon regulation, about greenhouse gas reductions, that's going to require a whole new focus on all sorts of things differently than what we've done before. And because that's such an important issue, and because there is a cataclysmic consequences if we do it wrong, we're going to have to get a lot more serious. And on that issue, to tie that one back here, Commissioner Avakian's presentation mentioned this. We're going to shift over to a green economy. I don't know what a green economy is. I don't know what a green job is. I do know we're going to need folks that can weld, and we're going to need folks that can build, and we're going to need folks that can put in furnaces and put in insulation, and all the regular things that we've done in the past, we're going to have to do a lot more of it, because it's not just going to be new construction we need them for. It's going to be retrofitting over a million Oregon households and office buildings to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions to actually get anywhere on our carbon goals. We don't have those workers today. And not only do we not have them, we're not sure where to find them. That's the kind of criticality that I think we really need to bring to this issue. That in order to do any part of what we've said we need to do, and I believe we do need to do, the mechanical piece of getting people trained, getting them into the trades, getting them understanding how to get there is going to be much more important than it was before. In years past, we could put up with an inefficient system because it was annoying but not critical. Now, I don't think we have the luxury of putting up with inefficient systems because the consequences of that inefficiency are much more pronounced. There's simply no way to install a windmill, for example. And the governor has said he wants Oregon to be the wind energy capital of the world. That's an admirable goal. Someone's got to figure out how to put the thing together. Someone's got to plant it. Someone's got to dig the gravel to put in the base. Someone's got to build the road to get the power. All the things that go with that. And as you well know, as you've heard from many people, we're not set up to do that. And that is every bit as big an obstacle as not having a power line back to the intertide of California. It's every big as obstacle as not having the wind in the first place if you don't have the workers to put the thing together. My industry right now is on its face. You know that. We had at one point, we've lost since October probably close to 20,000 direct jobs in our industry. If you roll that backwards, that means how big of an impact home building and construction had on this state economically. If you roll it back one more step and look at all the stuff we're going to be doing in order to respond to the energy efficiency mandates, how many more workers we're going to need, not just to replace the ones that are putting those people back to work, but on top of that, these kind of training programs are critical. And I'll hop off the soapbox, Mr. Chairman, but I do want to mention, after the committee hearing last time, I spoke to the chair offline because I didn't know if it would be pertinent, and this particularly with response to LC 3539. The Florida Home Builders Association has created a program called Future Builders of America. I was involved in Future Farmers of America growing up. We talked about that briefly. I've since talked to my counterpart. In fact, I talked to him the same day in Florida. He sent me the information, gave me their website links. I'll be more than happy to put a presentation together for you. That's been on our list of things to do so far. Our association is to create these Future Builder chapters because, as I mentioned, we're in Representative Holby's committee last session, we've set up this process for continuing ed for contractors. And one of the things we've decided to do is not only have the continuing ed for contractors going forward, but to have education going backwards, back into the high schools, and we figured we would, at some point, would set up these FBA chapter around Oregon. That may be the time to move that up our priority list, and we'll certainly help with that, because to my mind, that's the answer, to get into the high schools, not wait for kids to decide they're not really liking English Lit all that well and go find a job in construction, but to get them in the high schools, teach them how to use the tools, put them on job sites, get them familiar with the industry, give them that option, and that sort of a structured program may tie in very nicely with what Commissioner Avakian is talking about, and it may be a way of getting through the educational maze with some of these outside programs like we used to have with VICA and FFA and now perhaps FBA. I think there's a really good opportunity to do all sorts of good things here, not only for workforce training, but for our education system. As I mentioned last time, and I'll close, I think it's critical that we turn out well-rounded students. And I don't just mean working on the diet in the school cafeteria. I mean that can read and write and cipher and calculate and swing a hammer and work on an engine and things, life skills. You know, I'd like to think that after we get kids out of Oregon schools, they shouldn't have to go to an ACE Academy. They should be able to get out of an Oregon public school and have some notion of how to replace a garbage disposal when they grow up, or how to help their kid build a soapbox derby car, or whatever it might be. We've shortchanged our kids. Let's not do it any further. We'll help, as I mentioned before, and I'll repeat it again, we'll help any way we possibly can. Last thing, Mr. Chairman, I would have been remiss. We have an educational foundation within the home builders, and we've been giving out scholarships to kids both at the high school level and at the community college level. We're hoping, in fact, even in this time when everybody's broke, we're trying to raise money. We have a fundraiser coming up in April. We're trying to raise money to put back into that foundation because we believe, just as you've heard from everybody else, how important it is to make it possible for kids to get into the trades, get into a vocational education program, and to go to a community college or a construction program like at Oregon State and elsewhere that actually will teach them how to be a superintendent, to teach them how to run a job, whatever it might be. We will be your allies as we move forward. Let me know how we can help, and thank you very much.
Thank you so very, very much. John, I'm going to ask that you get with Kevin, and I'd want to schedule a presentation on the Florida program.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, for the committee here. Questions or comments for our committee members? Jim, the fact that you have so many jobs without adequately prepared candidates, at a point in time when we have an official unemployment rate of 9% and unofficially hovering somewhere in the vicinity of 15%, we've got to find a better way of doing this thing. I mean, there are people that would practically pay to get a job in today's economy here in this state. And for us to allow $45 an hour jobs to go unfilled because we don't have the folks who are adequately skilled to fill them is borderline criminal, and you know, we ought all of us be ashamed that we've allowed this to happen. There is a
disconnect here between the demand and supply for labor, and we can ill afford to allow that to continue. We have to find a mechanism to change that. I think that our committee bills are part and parcel of an effort to try and begin making those changes. And I want to thank you for your testimony. I want to thank you for your commitment to filling that pipeline. And I want to thank you for your offers to help this committee as well. So thank you very much. I certainly appreciate that. We have a few minutes left here. And I understand, Commissioner Avakian, that you or someone from your office has some additional testimony that you would like to present. I am perfectly happy to hold that over for an additional hearing if you would like, recognizing that it may be longer than 4 minutes.
No, we don't need to do anything more today.
Okay, fine. And Norm Eater, is Norm, are you still here? Yes, he is. Norm, okay. And is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify today? Mike, why don't you come up at the same time? Anyone else? Okay, thank you. Gentlemen, please proceed.
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, my name is Norm Eater. I'm here representing Manufacturing 21 Coalition, and I couldn't resist. So let me be brief. You have in front of you, before you, a suite of workforce bills. Chairman Witt has been eloquent this morning in describing the urgency. In listening to this morning's testimony, and first I want to thank Commissioner Avakian for his commitment to these issues. That leadership from a elected official on a statewide basis is terribly important. But let me just give you, a workforce haiku, with apologies to the great Japanese poets. But it strikes me that if you keep these things in mind, we will, by in a few weeks, have an excellent piece of legislation or multiple bills that will address the problems that you've heard about for the last two sessions. Simplicity of organization, accountability across the system, local flexibility that allows innovation, and practical targeted initiatives to erase barriers and bridge gaps. If you do those things, we'll have a pretty good bill at the end of the session.
Thank you very much.
Mike Sullivan, political director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers. And my personal irritation with the nursing situation is very personal. My wife is an RN, has a master's degree in early childhood development, did all the training program for Mid-Willamette Valley Hospital for over 20 years, and now is going online every night, literally 7 days a week, up 1 o'clock in the morning to get another master's in nursing because there's no way to grandfather in. I know that's nothing that you guys can do, but the point of the matter is we have this bottleneck, and it's got to open up. There has to be a grandfathering of the nurses to allow the flow to go, and I don't understand what the issue is there other than, you know, they have a niche market, or I don't understand it, but I'm dealing with a wife who is, you know, stressed out to the max doing a regular job, then up every night, and this will go on for another year. So that's a personal take on that. On the issue of what you're dealing with, and it's terrific stuff, history for me at Cascade Steel was in the late 80s, I helped get the apprenticeship that I was in, roll turning, and the company went with that. Then when I became president, we got two more apprenticeships going. We had things go like millwrights would go to electricians, and you know, now you've got a really trained worker, but they would take off from McMinnville and go north to Newburgh and work at the paper mill of the people I represent today. And it got so horrific that way. We lost six, maybe seven really good electricians. Cascade did a very good job training. Smurfit, I guess, didn't. Well, I don't really know what the circumstances are, but we lost them to the point that the CEO at the time, Kurt Sutsi, just threw up his hands, and he shut down all the apprentices. So what happened, in fact, is the workforce had no ability to utilize the apprenticeship program. So what I'm saying in this is that it's got to be fair all the way across the board. I know in Germany, in the steel industry, they're so proud of the apprenticeship programs that they do. The apprentices are free to go anywhere in the Federation and work. So we can't tax good employees and good workers for doing the right thing to allow people to rob, if you know what I'm saying. So that's just my history take.
And a prime example, I think, Mike, that when we engage in these programs, it's got to be broad-based. It's got to be across industry-wide so that we're not experiencing, in essence, one employer robbing another employer's apprentices. And I think you make a very good point that we need to have broad access to these programs.
And one other thing, Mr. Chairman. You know very well there was a steel mill 15 years ago that wanted to come into the state, that wanted tax incentives to do so at the hardship of two counties that were very depressed. And these things have to be vanguarded as well. And I guess I'm talking about the enterprise zone stuff. I mean, I've seen this historically, too. It was defeated. They never came. They went to Washington. So, good luck. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. What I'd like to do, committee members, is just kind of give you some sense of where I would like us to head here, and I'm going to need some volunteers. It would be my intent, now that we've heard the testimony and we've done our charts, and I've had discussions with Kevin already, I'd like for us to have a work group, and that, because of quorum considerations, means two people. I would like to have Vice Chair Huffman serve on that, and most of us wear two hats. We have other lives outside of the legislature, and I would like his expertise as a small business person. And that means that I would also like to have a labor viewpoint. We've been, I think we've achieved consensus on this committee that of what needs to be done, and I frankly think that a united voice that demonstrates that business and labor are strongly in support of whatever this committee does is important. So I will leave it to you two to flip a coin, or however you want to decide, to one of you to serve on that work committee. I would like that work committee to meet in our subcommittee's normal time slot on Tuesday. And Kevin will bring the charts. We also have some ideas of some of the things that we would like to see coming out of the hearings. I know earlier it was discussed that a list of all the workforce development providers could be a very useful item. As an example, that would be one thing. I'm going to tell you that, as the chair, one thing that I would like to have added to that list is finding some way to begin replicating the ACE Academy wherever we might be able to do that. And obviously, as a work committee, you're going to be coming up with a number of other items. That will be Tuesday. I would also like to invite members of the public who are interested to be part of that work group. I could certainly use the expertise of Norm Eater and James Sager. I would also like Commissioner, someone from your office, if you could free someone up, would be extremely valuable. And we have had a lot of other folks. We've had the chambers. We've had business groups. We've had a number of people from labor. If we could get a couple of additional people from the public to volunteer, the line will start up here right at the close of the committee hearing, and Kevin will be taking names. With that, I am going to... hold over the hearing on House Bill 2399 that would be Thursday, correct? Until next Thursday. Before we adjourn, too, is there anything further for the good of this subcommittee?
Yes, please. Quick preview of coming events.
Very quickly. We are going to, as I mentioned earlier, I don't actually have to look this way. as I mentioned earlier in response to Representative Dembro's comments, we are doing our best to try to get the task force bill before us on Thursday. I'm going to speak with the Speaker's office, and if they're watching, I'll be coming soon to see if we can get that to the Business Laboring Committee and then get it down to us so we can talk about it on Thursday. Also, I have spoken. We've got a couple presentations. The veterans, we're still trying to work out logistics. We'll see if we can either get them. Mr. Chandler has indicated, and we're going to see if we can work together about a presentation on the Future Builders Association as well. And one other thing, we are also going to give a quick summation of the Vestas information. Keith has been working rather diligently getting it put together, and he's been very helpful with respect to that. So we'll be giving a presentation as well.
Very good. Thank you. So just a reminder, work group on Tuesday may not be in this room. Kevin will notify you. Next actual full subcommittee meeting week from today. Thank you very much, everyone. We're adjourned.